This is the Does God Exist Quarterly Journal for the second quarter of 2019. Your reader is John Clayton, and the cover of this quarterly issue of the Does God Exist Journal has a beautiful picture of a waterfalls. It's actually a waterfalls in the Grand Canyon. And our theme for this quarter is Knowing God Through His Creation. This journal has been in existence since 1970. And in all those years, we have had numerous articles dealing with the evidence for the existence of God from a scientific perspective. We have talked about cosmology and the question of the creation of time, space, and matter energy. In recent years, we have considered approaches from quantum mechanics and relativity. We have given numerous evidences from a teleological perspective that there is design in the creation that cannot be explained but chance. Also, we have talked about evidence that the Bible is not of human origin, and if there is inspiration, there has to be an inspirer. We have dealt with those characteristics of humans that are not a product of our brains, and have suggested that we are created in God's image. The concept of morality and why humans can be moral is another area we have talked about. All of these arguments tend to say there's something out there without identifying in any detail what the nature of that something is. In our first quarter edition of this journal, we talked about why we exist and knowing God can help us go further with that understanding. Here are five things that we can know about God through our observations of the creation itself, and through a careful reading of His Word. Number one, God has an appreciation of beauty. In the Genesis account, there is a repeated use of the phrase, quote, "And God saw that it was good," end of quote. In Genesis 1 and verse 10, the phrase is used in reference to dry land and the seas. In verse 12, the phrase is used in reference to land vegetation. In verse 18, it is used in reference to sunlight and moonlight. And in verse 25, it is used in reference to animal life on the surface of the earth. Scientific studies of the earth and life on the earth not only show how things work, but it also shows the beauty in everything we examine. When we think about the wavelengths of visible light that allow photosynthesis, and the way that same light displays the colors of leaves in the fall, we marvel at the choices that make it possible. When botanists study the complexities of flowers, the design that allows the colors and patterns we admire, we can't help but wonder at their creation. Jesus referred to this in Matthew 6 and verse 29 when he reminded us as we look at a lily that, quote, "even Solomon in all of his glory was not arrayed like one of these." Psalms 50, beginning with verse 1, tells us, "The mighty God, even the Lord, has spoken and called the earth from the rising of the sun to its going down. Out of Zion, the perfection of beauty, God has shined." We understand the science behind beautiful sunrises and sunsets, and we know why the sky is blue and why trees are green. But our understanding of this involves a conscious creation of God that allows us to admire beauty, which in many cases is unnecessary. The choices God has made tell us He knows about beauty at all levels. Have you ever sat near a waterfall and seen the rainbows and the colors of your surroundings and thanked God for creating it with those characteristics? Have you snorkeled or scuba dived and wondered at the beauty of your surroundings and the thought about the fact that the colors in some cases are unnecessary from a survival standpoint, but they speak to us about God's love for beauty? We praise diversity for several reasons, but many things in the creation have color not as a requirement for survival, but as a statement about God's nature. Number two, God has wisdom far beyond our capacity to understand. Proverbs 8 is a passage that speaks about another characteristic we see in God. That is wisdom. In verse 1, we are told that wisdom cries out and understanding puts forth her voice. In verse 5, wisdom continues, quote, Oh, you simple, understand wisdom. End of quote. And then some wonderful characteristics of God are brought out. Verse 22 tells us that wisdom was involved before the beginning, before the earth ever was. In the past 25 years, we have seen science verify the fact that before the physical creation in which we exist, there were large numbers of things being carefully and intelligently produced. We are just beginning to understand from a scientific perspective how electric charge, magnetism, mass, gravity, and time were created. What we are seeing is that the universal laws that govern physical matter do not accurately describe how those things were produced. Proverbs 8 ends with wisdom saying, quote, "Whoever finds me shall obtain the favor of the Lord," verse 35. Number 3, God functions in a domain that far exceeds what humans can comprehend. One of the major human errors is to create a God in our image. The old man in the sky concept of God is alien to the Bible and to common sense. But we see cartoons in the media and even read books that relegate God to being a superhuman, but a limited human nonetheless. Paul addressed this error in his wonderful discourse in Acts 17, when he told the Athenians that he was going to tell them about a God that they ignorantly worshipped, verse 23. He went on to describe God as one in whom we live and move and have our being, unquote. Science has demonstrated to us that there are dimensions beyond the three dimensions we know about, and that those dimensions have a relationship to us. Scientific discussions about string theory and brain theory, that's B-R-A-N-E, argue about 11 spatial dimensions. Studies of light have taught us that two-dimensional objects like photons behave differently than us three-dimensional beings. Understanding that God is not limited as we are allows us to understand more about why God created us. It helps us to understand the nature of our moral choices, and why, after our physical bodies no longer function, we have an existence beyond the physical. Number 4, God has love far beyond our capacity to understand. The being we have just described also has a capacity to love that is beyond our ability to understand. The very fact that there are 4 different Greek words for love tells us that love is far more complex than we realize. Our culture has become obsessed with sexual love. But there is much more than that. How can God love us enough to, quote, send his only begotten Son, end of quote, that we might enter the domain in which God exists? We have a hard time with Revelation 21, 3 through 5, in which God describes the domain that his love offers to all people. It tells us that God will be with us, that all pain, tears, death, and crying will be gone. God says he will make all things new, end of quote. That's verse 5. How can God love us that much? Because we can't comprehend that dimension of love. Humans have reduced the image of the Bible and of salvation to the three-dimensional world in which we live. We see war and death and all kinds of evil instead of the spiritual existence that God describes. Scientific studies of human love find it far more complex than, quote, survival of the fittest. The human element of being willing to die for someone else that you are not related to places naturalists between a rock and a hard place. You can't deny that humans do things that defy Darwinistic models of animal behavior. The very notion of patriotism, adoption, benevolence, and giving speak of what God's love provides us with the capacity to do. All branches of anthropology support the view that human love is unique, and being created in God's image is far more meaningful when we understand that. Number 5, God looks into the future in making his decisions and in executing judgment. How many times have we said, why did this have to happen? We as humans have a hard time with life because we can't look into the distant future. We also struggle with understanding how God can look ahead and not move to change what is going to happen. Someone has said, quote, if I can know the mind of God, then God isn't God, end of quote. There are many aspects of this question to consider. The reason for God's creation of humans and the struggle between the forces of good and evil is a part of this. But those are not things that can be scientifically verified. What we can understand from science is God's patience and his reason for action. Why is there a New Testament and an Old Testament? Trying to answer this from a political or social standpoint may be satisfying, but not convincing to many of us. What we know scientifically is that the first humans on this planet were nomadic and primitive. There is a good medical reason why hygienic laws given in the Old Testament were as restrictive as they were. Food taboos are understandable. We understand the danger in eating poorly cooked pork. The reasons for not eating blood are clear. The reason to quarantine certain human ailments has been verified by modern medical science. God's patience is clearly seen in how long he tolerated potentially destructive human behaviors, such as polygamy and war. When Jesus Christ came to the earth, he brought a whole new way of thinking. Modern psychologists and sociologists and even a few political leaders have come to understand from their scientific disciplines the wisdom of what Jesus taught. Modern skeptics trained in the sciences have a tough time denying the validity of everything Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount. The potential to eliminate hunger in the world is available to us if we get rid of the practices that worked when humans were nomadic and without ovens or medical facilities. If we consider every human to be special because every human is created in the image of God, we can eliminate war, violence, abuse, and other ills of humanity. God is patient and has created the world patiently and with understanding that some humans will reject what he has called us to do. Quote, "Take heed that no man deceive you, for many shall come in my name claiming to be the Savior and shall deceive. And you will hear of wars, for nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. And there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes." Matthew 24, verses 4 through 14. We can't know and see what God knows and understands, but his patience is essential to us. If God were not patient with me, I would have been destroyed a long time ago. Paul concludes his discourse in Athens by saying that, quote, "At the times of this ignorance, God winked at, but now commands all men everywhere to repent, because he has appointed a day in which he will judge the world in righteousness by Christ Jesus." End of quote. I am thankful for God's creation of beauty, for his wisdom, for the dimensions that have made this world possible, and especially for his love and patience. Implausible coincidences. For the past 50 years, we have presented a large number of evidences that the creation of Earth and of life on the Earth cannot be a product of chance. Our arguments have been statistical, starting with the basic rule that when you have many parameters, you can establish the total probability by multiplying the odds of all the factors involved. That approach has not changed, but the number of parameters and the odds grows with new data and information. Implausible coincidences continue to compound. In recent years, astronomers have found thousands of planets orbiting other stars in the Milky Way. Skeptics point out that the probability of one of those planets harboring sentient beings like ourselves gets better with every new discovery. An article by John Gribben appeared in Scientific American in September of 2018, page 96. The title of the article was, quote, "Are Humans Alone in the Milky Way?" Although Gribben suggests that some form of life exists elsewhere in the galaxy, he insists there could be no sentient beings like ourselves. The reasons for concluding that we are alone in the Milky Way galaxy are these amazing and implausible coincidences, and those are all in quotes. In the article, Gribben plainly states this, and here's his quote, "Optimism about the possibilities of intelligent extraterrestrial life ignores what we know about how humans came into existence. We are here because of a long chain of implausible coincidences. Many, many, many things had to go right to result in the situation in which we find ourselves. This chain is so implausible, in fact, that there is good reason to conclude that humans most likely are the only technological civilization in the galaxy." That's John Gribben in a quote from Scientific American. That is an interesting conclusion. The article goes on to list the variables that point to that conclusion. Here's a summary of some of those variables. Special timing. The elements that make up a terrestrial planet like Earth are produced from hydrogen and helium by thermonuclear fusion. Astronomers can see supernova explosions producing the heavy metals that make up a terrestrial planet and life itself. But it takes time for this process to create the necessary elements. Most of the exoplanets we see have minimal amounts of the heavy elements because they are early in their stellar evolution. Even the Sun itself is 71% hydrogen and 27% helium, with only 2% metals. The timing of putting the materials together to make a terrestrial planet is critical. Location in the galaxy. The location of a solar system in the galaxy makes a difference. The galactic habitable zone is the area where there is a freedom from the concentration of supernova. Systems near the center of the galaxy have high levels of radiation in the form of X-rays and cosmic rays. There is an enormous black hole at the center of our galaxy called Sagittarius A, which produces massive amounts of radiation. Gamma ray bursts occur in certain places in the galaxy. In our area of the galaxy, sterilizing radiation bursts do not happen. Recent studies of the galactic habitable zone tell us that it extends from 23,000 to 30,000 light years from the center, only about 7% of the galactic radius. This zone contains only about 5% of the stars because stars tend to concentrate towards the core of the galaxy. Our Sun is close to the center of the galactic habitable zone, providing rare long-term stability. A type of planet. So far, astronomers have discovered about 50 Earth-like planets. What that means, they have found rocky planets in the habitable zone that are about the same size as the Earth. Venus would qualify as an Earth-like planet, but it is an excellent example of how misleading the statement is. Venus has a thick crust with no sign of plate tectonics, no magnetic field, no way to recycle materials, and no stabilizing moon. Our moon keeps the tilt of the Earth's axis at 23.5 degrees, providing a stable climate. Realize that all these factors are just to have a ball of rock in the right place, at the right time, with the right materials in which to make life. Now we would need to calculate the odds of getting the right chemicals together at the right time and in the right place, with the right catalyst, to make the first living thing. Books have been written about how improbable these steps are. The writers are not religious fanatics, but scientists who are doing the research. Based on the evidence, John Gribben reached the conclusion that we are alone in the galaxy. And here's a quote. As we put everything together, what can we say? Is life likely to exist elsewhere in the galaxy? Almost certainly yes, given the speed with which it appeared on Earth. Is another technological civilization likely to exist today? Almost certainly no, given the chain of circumstances that led to our existence. These considerations suggest we are unique, not just on our planet, but in the whole Milky Way. And if our planet is so special, it becomes all the more important to preserve this unique world for ourselves, our descendants, and the many creatures that call Earth home. We must make one additional point. If the process involved an intelligent creator, then the probability of a habitable Earth with life on it is 100%. Perhaps we are not really alone in the galaxy because there is a God who cares about us. For those who might want to consider this option, we encourage you to watch the program 6 of the video series available free on DoesGodExist.tv. The article concludes by describing the improbable nature of advanced human life. However, it credits evolution for the creation of that life, while showing how implausible and amazing it is. We believe a supernatural intelligence was involved. We call him God. If you're interested in that article in Scientific American, it's available on the web at www.scientificamerican.com/article/are-humans-alone-in-the-milky-way/. That's all lowercase. The Canyonlands again. On Sunday, September the 9th, 2018, we began our 36th Canyonlands educational tour. Since 1968, we have been taking what I call field trips into the Grand Canyon and the areas that surround the Grand Canyon: Bryce Canyon, Zion National Park, Canyonlands National District, including Lake Powell, Meteor Crater, Painted Desert, Petrified Forest, and the areas that surround all of those places. My constant companion and technical expert has been Alan Doty from Sedona, Arizona, who holds advanced degrees in geology and has been a well-known figure in the Canyonlands area and an active Christian. Alan has made over 300 trips to the bottom of the Grand Canyon and was the first to climb Isis Temple. His knowledge of the area is second to none. Our trips into this area have included 4 boat rides floating the Colorado River through the Grand Canyon, 10 bus trips in which we spent a day at each of the sites of interest, and 16 hikes into points of interest in the Canyonlands area. We have prepared field trip guides and have conducted studies and lectures on all of these trips. Why do we do this? The Does God Exist ministry is dedicated to providing evidence to convince thinking people that science is a friend of faith in God, and that science and the Bible do not conflict. As educators in the public schools, we have seen a great deal of bad science and bad theology combined to destroy the faith of many young people. There is no area where more bad science and bad theology has been promoted than in the Canyonlands area. Not understanding the evidence and not taking the Bible literally has been a major source of conflict for many people. Taking the Bible literally means looking at who wrote the passage, to whom they wrote it, why they wrote it, and how the people of the time would have understood it. Having a week of concentrated study in one of the greatest natural science laboratories on earth is a wonderful way to combat bad science and bad theology. It is also our hope that participants will go back home and use what they have learned in our seminars. We want them to build the faith of people in their home congregations and combat the efforts of local skeptics to discredit the Bible and destroy faith in God. Our trip in 2018 was a bus tour in which 50 people participated. We departed from Flagstaff, Arizona. That area allows us to study basic rocks from which all other rocks are made, and that is volcanic material. Our analysis of rocks in space and of the minerals in the crust of the earth show us that all rocks are made of materials found in the interior of the earth. Granite, for example, is made of quartz, which, when it is broken down, makes sand, and thus sandstone. Orthoclase is another constituent that is found in granite, and it weathers to produce clay, which is a major part of shale. Visiting Sunset Crater and seeing the volcanic mountains surrounding Flagstaff allows us to understand the method by which all other rocks were produced. The first session of our trip was held on Sunday evening before we departed. In that session, we pointed out the one basic assumption that underlies our entire trip. That assumption is that God is not a magician who does everything by sleight of hand and magic. God is more of an engineer who uses natural processes to produce the things in the creation. The Bible tells us that God planted a garden, Genesis 2:8, not that he waved a magic wand and a garden appeared. When God created man's body in Genesis 2 and verse 7, he formed man from the dust of the earth. The Hebrew word used to describe that process is yatur, which is a word denoting something an artist might do in creating a work of pottery. God did not zap the Grand Canyon into existence with all its many kinds of rocks and embedded fossils. Many religious people want to have God speaking these things into existence, even though the Bible indicates God commanded the creation elements, indicating that other agents were doing the actual work. In our 21st century mentality of rejecting scams and con artists, it is important not to put God into the role of being a trickster. God did his creating processes in the same way that he can tell us to know he exists through the things he has made, quote unquote Romans 1:20. Wisdom speaks of God's engineering skills in Proverbs 8. Our approach to all of the evidence of the creation and all of the scriptures that explain what happened must agree. If the same God who gave us the Bible also did the creating, they cannot disagree. If there seems to be a conflict between the scientific evidence and what the Bible says, we have either bad science or bad theology or both. Because so many denominations have a theology that maintains that God is going to institute a physical kingdom, with Jesus being the ruler of that physical kingdom, there has been a great conflict between the physical evidence that the earth is very old and the creation week of the Bible. As we visit the Grand Canyon, Bryce Canyon, Zion National Park, Painted Desert, and Petrified Forest, the massive amount of evidence that the earth is much older than 6,000 years old becomes very apparent. So how do those of us who aren't locked into denominational traditional belief systems resolve this apparent conflict? The answer is to take the Bible literally. Look at who wrote it, who they wrote it to, why they wrote it, and how people it was written to would have understood it. The answer to the questions is revealing. Genesis was written in the style of Hebrew poetry to all of humanity, those living in the days of Moses, as well as those living in the 21st century. We cannot expect the account to deal with quantum mechanics, because people of Moses' day would have had no way to understand it. The animals that are described in Genesis are animals that people of the time of Moses would know existed. Don't look for duck-billed platypuses or echidnas or walking birds like an ostrich or a penguin or a dinosaur in the Genesis account. Don't look for stellar production of heavy elements by nuclear fusion or continental drift or stellar evolution like the Hertzsprung-Russell diagram. Hundreds of things can be listed that would not be expected in the biblical account because the ancient Israelites would have had no way to understand it. With that in mind, we would not understand a long, tedious discussion of how the earth was prepared for humans. Genesis 1:1 answers that question in one sentence. Quote, "Reshith Elohim bara shakim eretz," end of quote. That is Hebrew for, quote, "In the beginning God created the heaven and the earth," end of quote. This is a historical statement which says there was a beginning to everything in space and on earth. It tells us that everything was caused by God, acting to accomplish a planet with everything that humans would need to exist, including water, coal, oxygen, oil, nitrates, etc. Eretz, E-R-E-T-S, refers to a functional earth, not to a blob of gook. As we drive through the canyonlands, we see how this has been accomplished, and that physical, chemical, and biological agents have been involved. It is interesting to see that dinosaurs, as well as many microscopic forms of life, were the gardeners who made all of this happen. Without dinosaurs, there would have been no agents to process the giant plants of that day and spread their seeds. Without diatoms, there would have been no agents present to perform the oil and other fossil fuels that we need. Notice that this verse is untimed and undated. How long did it take? When did it happen? The Bible doesn't say. When the second creation occurs in the creation week, there is a specific explanation of where the plants, water creatures, cattle, goats, and sheep, chickens, and ducks, and so forth, of ancient Israelites came from. The first thing that happens is that the earth is formed. This is the same word as in Genesis 1:1, translated from the Hebrew word eretz. The second usage is clearly different, however, because Genesis 1:9-10 indicates the earth is separated from the water confining it to the earth, or in other words, the land, people live on, not the planet itself. The rest of the Genesis account uses the creation week to identify the sequence in which God prepared the animals that Israel knew. Each Hebrew word refers to domesticated animals, not unknown animals. Days are used to provide continuity to the sequence with which life is created. How long those days were, whether they were in sequence or had long time periods between them, can be debated endlessly. This is a creation of the animals that Israel knew. Genesis 1:1 describes the creation made by God with the things humans would need to survive on earth, and it is untimed and undated. All of the studies of geologists and biologists as to how these resources were produced are answered in Genesis 1:1. The creation week is a description of the actual production of humans and the animals they domesticated. Our trip into the Canyonlands area allows us to see God's power, wisdom, and planning that made it possible for us to exist. Proverbs 8 shows the wisdom is a causal agent of creation, not blind, mechanistic chance. Theological claims that create conflict between God's word and the display of his wisdom and design are due to human error, not to the Creator. The American Southwest, exuberant grandeur. This article was written by Kerry King, who was one of our guests on the Canyonlands Educational Tour. Driving through the West, Tom and I cringe at its dryness. Endless sand tufted with grass. Dust devils from whirling dervishes on the flat land dotted with isolated stony mountains. So why do we feel like we're underwater? It's easy to picture ourselves on the sandy bottom of a vast sea, with islands formed by those mountaintops. Maybe it's easy because 300 million years ago, that's exactly how it was. The Earth was a completely different place eons ago. Our truck would have been underwater. There are no continents except one large, huge landmass called Pangaea. Then, like an amoeba, Pangaea divided. Her daughters migrated, some rising, some sinking, until the Earth assumed its modern form. Happily for us, the American West rose. The Colorado Plateau, containing many of our national parks, rose repeatedly. As I climb up a trail in the Grand Canyon, I have to stop and catch my breath. Not surprising at 6,000 feet. The clear air rings with the panorama stretched out below. As the Colorado River sculpted its way through the land, it revealed deposits left by those ancient seas in the form of horizontal stripes of all colors. Folding of the Earth's crust ensured that not all the peaks looked the same. Watching over this kaleidoscope is the indigo high desert sky. The thin air isn't the only thing taking my breath away. Bryce Canyon is even higher. Walking along the rim at 9,000 feet, we appreciate the benches every 25 yards. Sharing our perch are ponderosa pines, clutching the rock with arthritic roots. As we gaze into the heart of the earth, eagles circle in search of prey some 2,000 feet below them. We sit about 1,000 feet above the birds. Although this place reminds us of the Grand Canyon, it lacks the gentler slopes we saw there. Why? At 9,000 feet, the mercury dives below freezing 200 times a year. Water flows straight down, and as it freezes, it chips vertical slabs from the rock. The resulting formations are called hoodoos and remind me of a crowd of football fans standing to watch their team score. Zion Canyon offers the opposite perspective. A superb tram system carries us through the emerald oasis that forms the canyon floor. What a peaceful change from the high desert dryness. The landscape reminded Mormon settlers of a temple, and they named the place Zion. The Indians simply called it straight up land. We like their name better. Golden sandstone cliffs reach confidently toward the turquoise sky. How does sand become stone? Pressure jams the grains together while rainwater leaches minerals that form cement. The same process clogs our pipes back home. No Western trip is complete without dinosaurs, so we go on the hunt. Every hunter knows if you want to find the critter, you find its food source. Dinosaurs are no different, so we head to the petrified forest. Here we see a record of life 225 million years ago. Back then, this child of Pangaea hadn't wandered far from the equator yet. It was hot, humid, and green. Fossils show ferns, fish, and yes, dinosaurs. Stone logs the size of redwoods lie on the ground. In ages past, fallen trees were buried under layers of earth whose minerals leached into the wood. As the wood decayed, the stone remained. Different minerals left a confection of colors. If it's too hot to enjoy the logs, the Dinosaur Museum is air-conditioned. Here's a little travel advice. First, the sun at 6,000 feet is three times as intense as it is where I live. Cover up. Drink twice the water you think you need. Second, traffic jams are legendary. For instance, one has to drive through a mile-long tunnel to get to Zion. A tunnel was opened in 1930 and features a broad two-lane highway for Model Ts. Today's motor coaches have to drive single file through the middle. Make your reservation early and be prepared to take your time. The national parks of the American West offer an experience unavailable anywhere else. Furthermore, they belong to us. Scientist and God. Our scientist featured in this issue is Albert Einstein, the theoretical physicist who developed the theory of relativity. And here are some direct quotes from Einstein's writings. Einstein said, quote, "The more I study science, the more I believe in God," end of quote. Einstein said, "I want to know how God created this world. I am not interested in this or that phenomenon, in the spectrum of this or that element. I want to know his thoughts. The rest are details." Science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind. As a child, I received instruction both in the Bible and in the Talmud. I am a Jew, but I am enthralled by the luminous figure of the Nazarene. No one can read the Gospels without feeling the actual presence of Jesus. His personality pulsates in every word. No myth is filled with such life. The fanatical atheists are like slaves who are still feeling the weight of their chains, which they have thrown off after hard struggle. They are creatures who, in their grudge against traditional religion, as the opium of the masses, cannot hear the music of the sphere. I'm not an atheist, and I don't think I can call myself a pantheist. We are in the position of a little child entering a huge library filled with books in many languages. The child knows someone must have written these books, but it does not know how. It does not understand the languages in which they are written. The child dimly suspects a mysterious order in the books, but doesn't know what it is. That, it seems to me, is the attitude of even the most intelligent human being toward God. Cynthia's Corner, written by Cynthia Clayton. Recognizing God's divine nature in his creation. What we know about God is plain to see, because God has made it plain. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made. Romans 1, verses 19 and 20. What is God's divine nature? We know that God is holy and cannot be tempted by evil, James 1:13. We know that God is love, 1 John 4, 8 and 16. We know that God is not a God of chaos, but a God of order, design, and wisdom, 1 Corinthians 14:33, Proverbs 8, 24 through 31. Most scientists who study what God has made, the world and the universe we live in, see evidence of intelligent design all around them. John's books on Dandy Designs are just a few examples of many design features we see throughout God's creation. Jeremiah 10 and verse 12 says that, quote, "God made the earth by his power. He founded the world by his wisdom and stretched out the heavens by his understanding," end of quote. The more science learns about God's creation, the more evidences they see of God's wisdom, power, and design. Another aspect of God's divine nature is his creativity, artistry, and love of beauty. The fact that we live in a world full of spectacular color and beauty and diversity speaks eloquently of the nature of its creator. Quote, "The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they display knowledge. There is no speech or language where their voice is not heard. Their voice goes out into all the world. Their words to the ends of the earth." End of quote, Psalms 19, verses 1 through 4. Because we alone as humans are created uniquely in God's image, in his likeness, Genesis 1:26, we are able to reflect his nature, to some degree, sinful though we are. We can find fulfillment and happiness in relationships, in work, and in pursuing our individual interests and talents. We can appreciate and get satisfaction from the beauty and diversity and awesome natural wonders that surround us. This is why we create, why we love art and beauty and design, why we seek love, purpose, and meaning. We are but a poor reflection of our Creator and his divine nature. Dandy designs. Leaf designed to preserve trees. Heavy winds frequently blow down human-made structures, but healthy trees are almost never blown down. We'd expect trees to be major victims of high winds, but that is not the case, and it is due to leaf design. To survive strong winds, trees need two things. The most obvious is structural support, strong, flexible branches, sturdy trunks, broad bases, and good root anchorage. A more subtle requirement is the leaf design to preserve the tree. Leaves must have minimal wind drag. A fluid, such as air, flowing around an object generates drag. To minimize drag requires some streamlining. To reduce the amount of friction between the fluid and the object, a highly streamlined object will usually be gently rounded upstream and elongated and pointed downstream. For healthy trees, the leaves offer the most surface area and thus the most drag. Different trees have different leaf designs, but all of them are designed to avoid destruction in a windstorm. American holly leaves have a method that involves the leaves being able to flatten themselves against each other. When the wind becomes strong, the leaves turn and lie flat, significantly reducing the drag. Tulip tree leaf design allows the leaves to roll up in strong winds. The blade of the leaf points away from the stem. The wind blows against the leaf. It forms a cone pointing upwind at the stem. The blade forms the broad area of the cone away from the wind direction. The higher the wind, the tighter the cone, and the less wind resistance. Black locusts similarly have leaves that roll together to produce a cylinder. Each of these designs depends upon the properties of the leaf. If the leaves were too stiff, they could not assume the right geometry. The flexibility of their stems has to be high, and the surface of the leaf must be carefully designed and restricted. You can argue that natural selection does all of the designing, and that given enough time, it will select the proper shape. But remember, the changes in climate mean you don't have infinite time to apply the process. God's engineering wisdom gave us leaf design to allow the longest season for each tree. Sit in your backyard on a breezy day and watch what the leaves do to preserve the tree that you prize so highly. News and notes. Surrogate motherhood and abortion. Surrogate motherhood is becoming more common. In a surrogacy contract, a woman agrees to allow someone to rent her body to have their child. Some fertility specialists are selling surrogacy as part of their offerings. The January-February 2019 issue of Citizens Magazine, pages 13 through 15, reported the case of a surrogacy contract running into difficulty. The surrogate mother had agreed to deliver twins, a boy and a girl. A male embryo and a female embryo were implanted into her body. The female embryo failed to implant, and the male embryo split into male twins. The surrogate mother developed preeclampsia, and her organs began to shut down, forcing delivery of the baby boys 10 weeks early. This caused the boys to battle for their lives in the hospital's neonatal intensive care unit. The couple who had paid to have a boy and a girl became hostile because they weren't getting what they paid for. They weren't interested in the boys. But the surrogate mother bonded with the twins. When they were placed in a neonatal unit, she was left with a deep sense of emptiness, anxiety, and regret. The Supreme Court has refused to hear two cases on surrogacy issues. In both cases, the surrogate mothers wanted to keep the children. In one case, the woman was caring triplets for a single man who wished to abort at least one due to financial concerns. The other was a mother who learned that the couple she was working for had strong racial prejudices. In both cases, the surrogates lost. The practice of surrogate motherhood exploits low-income women and families. We would suggest that surrogacy is morally wrong. Abortion advocates maintain that a baby is merely an extension of the mother's body, so she has the right to exterminate the baby because it is just an unwanted part of her body. Surrogate motherhood assumes that the baby is a singular physical entity that can be engaged or terminated at the will of the adults involved, for any reason. The Bible tells us that humans are uniquely created in the image of God. The baby possesses a soul and is fully human. Luke 1:41-44 tells us that when Elizabeth saw Mary, who was pregnant with Jesus, the unborn John leaped for joy in Elizabeth's womb. The Bible makes it clear that life and motherhood are sacred. James Watson's racial remarks. James Watson, along with Francis Crick, discovered the double helix structure of DNA, and they received a Nobel Prize for their work. Even though he is 90 years old, Watson has been highly sought after as a speaker, but his racial remarks have changed things. In early January of 2019, Watson said in a PBS interview that, quote, genes are responsible for inferior intelligence among blacks. There are so many problems with that claim that it is hard to know where to start. The claim that blacks have inferior intelligence is a very ignorant statement. IQ tests are loaded with cultural bias, and there are different types of IQ tests. My foster son would consistently score 40 to 50 on a Stanford Binet test, and yet he would score 90 to 100 on the OTIS. The OTIS was a test based on verbal skills. Because we read to Tim regularly during his childhood years, he had average verbal skills. The Stanford Binet was not verbal, but was based upon reasoning. Tim was and is mentally challenged in those areas. Many blacks do score lower on IQ tests that are written by upper-class whites in New England. On an IQ test written by a black author raised in a profoundly racist geographic area, blacks have better scores than whites. Unbiased testing does not support Watson's assumption that blacks have inferior intelligence. Another issue is that there are different kinds of intelligence. Coco, the gorilla trained by Penny Patterson, could use the sign language of the deaf. His IQ score was in the 90s, close to normal human values, on a test that measured literary capacity. On a test that measured scientific reasoning, the scores were far lower. That test measured a different kind of intelligence. Because of James Watson's racial remarks, the laboratory he led stripped him of honorary titles. The Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory immediately printed a statement saying Watson's comments were reprehensible and completely without a scientific basis and were a misuse of science to justify prejudice. The Bible describes humans as created in the image of God and condemns all attempts to separate humans on any criteria. There is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither bond nor free, there is neither male nor female, for we are all one in Christ Jesus, quote unquote, Galatians 3 and verse 28. James Watkin is an expert on DNA. He is not an expert on racial origins or how our understanding of the function of DNA impacts areas as nebulous as intelligence. Watson's racial remarks make that clear. Cosmic coincidence. A cosmic coincidence took place on November 5, 2018. It had to do with our sun and two probes that NASA sent into space. A bubble surrounds the solar system, which scientists call the heliosphere. The sun sends out charged plasma particles called the solar wind. There is a limit as to how far the solar wind reaches, and that is the outer edge of the heliosphere bubble. NASA's Voyager 2 reached it on November the 5th. Also on November the 5th, NASA's Parker Solar Probe reached the inner edge of the heliosphere by flying towards the sun. The fact that both probes arrived at the extreme boundaries of the heliosphere at the same time was not and could not be planned by scientists at NASA. We would have to call it a cosmic coincidence. NASA launched Voyager 2 41 years earlier in 1977. On its journey out of the solar system, it flew past and took pictures of all four gas giant planets, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. In late August of 2018, its plasma detectors, called Faraday cups, began to indicate it was reaching the edge of the heliosphere. After 310 days of crossing that boundary, scientists determined that it passed out of the solar wind on November the 5th. Earth is about 93 million miles from the sun. Voyager 2 had reached 120 times Earth's distance from the sun. Meanwhile, NASA launched a Parker solar probe on August the 12th, 2018, and it traveled towards the sun. In 3 months, it arrived at the sun's outer atmosphere called the corona. So the cosmic coincidence is the two NASA probes launched 41 years apart arrived at almost the same time as the outer inner limits of the heliosphere. Their arrival at the same time was a pure coincidence. The marvelous system they are investigating and that supports life on this planet is certainly not a coincidence. It shows the power and wisdom of the Creator. German religious tax. When Germans fill out their tax forms for 2018, they are required to indicate their religion. The state then collects a tax, which is about 9% of the person's income tax, and distributes the money to the relevant church or synagogue. If you refuse the German religious tax, you can be denied access to church schools or daycare centers, and you can even be denied communion or burial services. The problem with this arrangement is that many religious groups do not register as public corporations, and groups such as the Islam or the Church of Christ don't have a national church system. The founder of the liberal mosque in Berlin, Sayran Atiz, wants to establish a democratic Islamic council, but conservative Muslims want no part of such an idea. Groups like the Church of Christ, which do not have a national board or assembly, are opposed to any solution on very much the same idea. Jesus told his followers to render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God's, Matthew 22:21. The Bible also makes giving a personal decision that is between the giver and God, 2 Corinthians 9:7. When those guidelines are not followed, the chaos that results will eventually destroy religious freedom. Miracle soil. For 200 years, people have used soil from the churchyard of Sacred Heart Church in the Boho Highlands of rural Northern Ireland as a remedy for a variety of ailments. Is there something miraculous about that soil? The researchers discovered that a previously unknown strain of Streptomyces bacterium that is responsible for the soil's seemingly miraculous ability. One of the problems of treating diseases like MRSA is that pathogens develop resistance to common drugs, and science needs to find new antibiotics to control them. The Sacred Heart soil has a natural antibiotic. The United Kingdom Times magazine reported on the Sacred Heart miracle soil. It quoted the principal researcher, Jerry Quinn, about folk cures. Quinn said, quote, "Some of these cures might have a particularly effective, but the people just didn't have any knowledge of the scientific principles or biochemistry behind them. Science can help us to know the difference between bogus medical claims and treatments that really work." The question of how this particular antibiotic got into the churchyard soil will stir debate. We would suggest that all areas of nature, there is a balance because God designed it that way. If scientists continue to look to nature, they may find natural cures for most human maladies. They may even find them not only in churchyards, but also in the yards of leading atheists. Real creation. In virtually all areas of science, one thing is always true. When we answer one question, we find many others. No area demonstrates this better than the subject of real creation. By real creation, we mean an understanding of how the cosmos came into being out of nothing. What we are not talking about is the process of biological change, which is known as evolution. Darwinian evolution is not an alternative to creation because it is an entirely different subject. Darwinian evolution studies changes in biological systems which have already been created. It has nothing to do with the processes involved in creating the special physical universe, including time, space, and matter energy. Quantum mechanics agrees with the biblical account that real creation was not a physical process which can be explained by classical physics. We can use classical physics to describe what continued the formation of the cosmos as we see it today. However, that is not real creation because it only deals with changes in what was already created. Astronomy magazine published an excellent article by William Jones in their February 2019 issue, page 68. Dr. Jones, a professor at Princeton University, gave a summary of how cosmologists approach the question of real creation. And here's what he said, quote, "The answer is a combination of big extrapolation and even bigger assumption based on a solid hunch and the surety of our ignorance regarding what is really going on. The truth is, everything about the early universe is speculative, and that is precisely why we study it. Dr. Jones then goes on to explain what our current guesses are and what we base them on. For those of us with a scientific interest and background, this kind of study helps us comprehend the nature and power of God. We hope to learn more about the processes involved in preparing a place for us creatures created in God's image to exist as we transition to the dimension in which it all started. In addition to helping us comprehend God's nature, these studies help us to see the wisdom of God and His planning. Proverbs 8:22-32 describes the role of wisdom in the process of real creation. Williamson Pink Diamond. We sometimes hear traditionalists say that apologetics is an affront to faith. The idea is that you just have to believe. They say that trying to show evidence for God's existence is misdirected. They insist that nowhere in the Bible is there an attempt to convince people that God is real. The story of the discovery of the Williamson Pink Diamond illustrates the role of looking at evidence to come to a valid conclusion. First of all, we would question the assertion that the Bible does not attempt to convince people of God's existence. Passages like Romans 1:19-23, Psalms 19:1-3, Psalms 139:14-18, and Proverbs 8 certainly make an apologetic argument. In using parables, Jesus called people to look at the creation around them to come to faith. The Williamson Pink Diamond is the main feature of the royal brooch of Queen Elizabeth II. It forms the center of a flower, with five white diamonds forming the petals. It was a 54.5-carat rough diamond, which was cut to a 23.6-brilliant-cut diamond. John Williamson was a Canadian geologist. In 1947, he was driving his Land Rover on a muddy backcountry road in what is today Tanzania when he got stuck in the mud. As Williamson was digging the Land Rover out of the mud, he noticed a pink rock that was typical of rocks that contained diamonds. Because of his geology training, he knew rocks and formations of that area. He carefully extracted the rock, cleaned it up, and realized it had a very large diamond. That is how he found the flawless pink diamond. At the time of his death from cancer in 1958, Williamson owned a diamond mine at that location and was one of the world's wealthiest men. Thousands of people had driven that road and probably saw the rock that contained the pink diamond. Williamson's training enabled him to realize what the rock was and pushed him to look at it carefully. Being able to recognize evidence is essential. There are some of us who have come to faith through science. The Does God Exist ministry was started and has been maintained for over 50 years by men and women who recognize the scientific evidence for God's existence and the credibility of the Bible. Like John Williamson, who gave the Williamson Pink Diamond to Princess Elizabeth and Prince Philip upon their wedding in November of 1947, we wish to share the evidence that led us to faith. This ministry is a part of our attempt to share the valuable gem we have found through science. And that's the end of the Does God Exist quarterly magazine for the second quarter of 2019. Knowing God through His creation has been our theme for this particular period, and we hope that you have been moved to think about how we can know so much more about God if we look at the creation that speaks of His abilities, desires, and plans. John Clayton is your reader. As the Lord wills it, we will be back to you in 3 months. Have a great day.